Seriously, girls. You're gonna get an A.
She's just afraid of the competition.
All good, all good. Okay, wonderful. Everybody, I hope as well. I had the pleasure of being in Cincinnati this weekend to go visit some of my grandkids. And I flew back very early this morning. So if I'm not as coherent as I normally try to be, you'll understand, I hope. And just but guide me back. But so bear with me.
I'll just say Garden of Eden.
Oh, that'll get me right back on track.
Love it.
Question. Why was the Torah given to us in a wilderness? Of all places, out in nothing, it's a desert. There's a mountain out there, obviously. But if you were God, if you were God and you decided that you were going to give the Torah, would you have chosen a desolate, empty desert area?
Absolutely.
Okay, why?
It's like a drug deal.
Because that way there's no like competition. You can be fully present. There's not a bunch of stuff going around. There's not man-made things going around. It's just God in God's creation, and Torah fills up the rest.
Okay.
Well, I think it was to inspire them because they were in the middle of a desolate place with nothing there, and they needed some extra
Of,
infusion of hope
oh.
and you know,
But did they
something.
have to go that way? God could have just taken them straight out of Egypt on the way to Israel, make a quick pit stop, or right after the crossing of the sea, they just witnessed the most amazing, give them the Torah right there and go right into Israel and move on.
Burning Man, you have to have effort.
I think 200, 400 years of slavery was a big effort.
I mean, you have to have effort in your transition from one state of being to a different state of being.
So I forget everything I just said.
Wait.
Forget everything I just said because Stacy used the word that I had no, I, there was no way I could have predicted. There's just no way.
Transition.
Transition.
Why?
Can you read what that says?
Transitions. I didn't look at your folders.
Yeah, but she gave you the secret
Yeah, she's not.
oh,
There's a transition.
That is such what?
Didn't Hashem want, I was like a generation to like die out, but didn't he intentionally make it not like an express flight?
Non-stop.
Yes, but no. Meaning, I can't put myself in God's mind. I can't do that. That could be in the next month, And listen to the representation of God's mind. They're great, Rabbi Tuffy, right? I have no idea what's in God's mind, but I do I feel that God had to have them die out? Not necessarily. There was a Hashem himself says, I didn't want to take you there directly. Take the short, what's the as the crow flies. Didn't want to take you as the crow flies because of whatever the reasons, right? So that definitely God himself says it in the Torah. But to have us die out, I don't think so. Because what would have happened had we not sinned with the golden calf? We would have gone in.
But there were some
We
that
would
didn't
have
make
gone
it.
in
much faster. Much faster. The intention was, the way I understand it is, after we left, good crossing of the sea, we were going to get to Mount Sinai, be given the Torah, and then head right into the land of Israel. That was the original intent.
And what's the mileage?
It's 11-day journey from beginning to end.
Okay.
Like that, I pulled out with break after
On
that. Bam.
what?
Yeah.
How many
hours
figured
a day?
It's 11 days. 11-day journey.
What is it hot?
Is that like 12 hours a day, roughly?
I don't know exactly how many hours, but it's called an 11-day journey. That's what it should have been. Instead of it's 40 years.
But how
and don't give me this because Moses didn't stop to ask directions. I've heard that already. Although it's true.
But there were some people that didn't go.
There are a lot of people that didn't go.
But did they not go from their choice or were they not invited or given the info of where to meet?
No, not the last one. No. Okay. This was not secret.
Yeah,
it's only for your eyes only. You know, we're gonna give out the secret hieroglyphic code. Here's the key. There were people that had assimilated into Egyptian right. culture that either by choice or didn't make it out.
Okay,
they were already so far into Egyptian culture that they lost that Jewish spirit. They had no interest in going.
Okay, so the people that
presumably
left,
yes,
were connected enough.
Correct.
Okay.
Now, we always run this risk, right? Going way off topic. There is a segment of the population that left that are not so on board. They're the ones who actually were the instigators of the golden calf. I'm just going to throw it out there. At the risk of we'll go down a whole different path, and you'll know that next month's topic will be transitions. How many people, I don't need an exact number, but what percentage of the people served and rallied around the golden calf?
5%.
30%. Yeah, she said 30%.
No, 20%.
20%.
Stealing 10%.
I tell you a great joke about that, stealing percentage. Totally not a true story, but it's great. It's a great story. Can you hear me, Sandy? Listen to the story. There's a fellow whose daughter got engaged, and he didn't have enough funds to make a wedding, so he tried to raise some funds, and it didn't go so well. So with no choice, he decided as a last resort, he's going to write a letter to God. So goes in. He says, "Dear God, thank you for all the wonderful things in my life. I really appreciate it. My daughter just got engaged. Now you don't have enough money. You know, can you send me, I don't know, $50,000, you know, for the wedding that's upcoming? Sincerest regards, Yanko, whatever, right? Right?" And he mails it and he addresses it to God. Of course, as fate would have it, there's a Jewish guy in the post office. He sees the letter addressed to God and he's like, "Oh, this looks interesting." So he opens it. And he reads it, and he's truly moved. He's moved by it. He decides he's going to send it to Reichman. You know the name Reichman? It was a very, very wealthy philanthropist. He decided he's going to send it to Mr. Reichman. So sure enough, about 3 weeks later, a check for $40,000 comes in the mail that he got. Amazing. Makes the wedding. Everything's great. About a year later, his next daughter got engaged. He tries again. Tries to raise the money. To no avail. Fine. Decided it worked last time. Let's try it again this time. That's another letter to God. Thank you so much for all the gifts that you've given me in my life. And I really appreciate last year helping me out. Right? So, but again, I need $50,000 to make the wedding. And da da da. P.S. Please don't send it to Reichman. He takes a 20% commitment. Yeah.
That's
cute.
That's
cute. So there goes your 10%. Okay. The Torah tells us that just about everybody. Just about everybody. Now, the women did not. The women did not participate. The women were excellent. Yes. Excellent, excellent. They did not participate. They tried to stop their husbands. No dice. Okay? So that's 50% right there. Okay? That's good. However, of the other, right, remaining, you know, the census, whatever, 600,000 men between the ages of 20 and 60, that's the census, basically. What percentage of them? Handful? Almost all did. The tribe of Levi did not. That tribe stayed out of it. But the other 11 tribes, they all participated. And yet, when the punishment came down, God was so upset with what had happened, how many people died in the plague? You would expect the number to be, if I tell you there's 600,000 men, right? Prime age, between 20 and 60, right? And even if it's only 20%, right? That's 12,000. No. 120,000. No. 12,000. Yes. I was right the first time. 600,000. 10% is 6,000. No? 10% is 60,000. Right. So 120,000. Right. If only 20, so I expect 120,000 of the only 3,000 died. Only 3,000. Now I say only in obviously in quotes. But if you have hundreds of thousands that are all worshiping and reveling around this calf, right? Why is only 3,000 dying?
Did he separate like the instigators from the followers?
Well, I didn't, but the Torah does. If you read the wording carefully, there's a group that said when the eagle, when the golden calf was made, it says, Ela Elohecha Yisrael. This is your God, O Israel. This is your God? Shouldn't it say this is our God?
Who said no, that?
There's a group that said when it was made, right? This is your God, Israel. What do you mean your God?
That's so interesting.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
If you read though, I'm telling you, this has been a bestseller, Stacey. Yeah. This has been a bestseller on the New York Times for 3,300 years.
But don't you have to really know Hebrew to get at the real meaning?
If you read it carefully, I'm curious what the English says. I'm curious what the English says.
All those English stuff. That's very interesting.
So the truth is, the way it breaks down is that there were 3,000 of them that really were major instigators. It was their idea to go do all this. Everybody else was schlepped along with a mob mentality. Doesn't mean they're innocent, and obviously God is upset and therefore punishes everybody for the most part. But
an
one,
accessory is
yes,
not punished. The
that's
same
correct.
Way.
That's correct. But you have to read it carefully.
I'm going to a lot of Torah classes.
Here we go, Gerald.
But weren't they all punished the same? None of them can go into Israel.
Yes, they all got all. But this was not the straw that broke the camel's back. It wasn't the calf. Anybody want to guess what it was?
Was it the stand up on the water? Yeah. Smashing the.
Nope.
Not me.
What other major faux pas of the Jewish people? How did they translate it? Without mustard. Without mustard.
No, right.
That's the problem. Hashem spoke to Moses, go descend. Remember, Moses is up on the mountain when this all happens. For your people that you brought up from the land of Egypt has become corrupt. They have strayed quickly from the way that I have commanded them. They have made themselves a molten calf, prostrated themselves to it, and sacrificed to it. And they said, this is your God, O Israel, which brought you up from the land of Egypt. In English.
Then they sacrifice some girl.
What?
They sacrifice girl, women, or children, or men. Oh, yeah.
That's been since the days of Abraham. That was a big no-no. Anyway, the sin that the straw that broke the camel's back was the sin of the spies.
I was going to say,
I knew you were.
That was Caleb, right?
Caleb was a good guy. And you know whose buddy was that was also a good guy? No. Joshua and Caleb were the two of the 12, the only two of the 12. The other 10 gave the negative report. But we'll save that for another time. We still haven't gotten to the.
Who were the two that people say like they you should be?
Ephraim and Manasseh, that's Joseph's sons.
Oh
my God, a little bit of knowledge is so dangerous.
That's on you.
I take full responsibility.
Okay.
Okay, but we still haven't, I don't think we've gotten to the crux of why. It can't just be that it was with no distractions. And I'll tell you why. Is because what took place when God came down and gave and spoke to all the Jewish people, what was going on? Yes, I'm asking you. So the whole point of it was to get away from all the distractions, right? So we take the kids' phones away and they're totally present. What do? We have music blaring and lights flashing. And you want them to pay attention, right? How's that supposed to work?
Wait, so there was like storms?
Yes, there was There was loud thunder and the shofar blasts and there was lightning and God's booming voice and yeah, good luck.
That's so funny how when you started talking, all I could think about was Burning Man, you know, that because you know it's the same kind of thing. Go out of nowhere.
So there has to be something more. There must be a deeper significance as to why God specifically chose a desolate area like the wilderness. And there are different answers that are proposed. Stacy, you're not so off. Some do suggest that it had to do with the concept that when you're on this big, which mountain was it given on?
Mount
Sinai. Was it the most lush? Was it the tallest? No. There's a concept that when it comes to Torah values, there's a sense of humility. It's not all the fanfare. It's just you do what's right because it's right. Oh, it's not for the prominence. It's not for the glory. It's not for quiet. And there's nothing else. You just do it because it's the right thing to do. There are some that propose that answer. And obviously, there's nothing wrong with that. But for tonight, I think there's another answer. And I think it really gets to a very important idea.
I still think it's because of the intimate senses to keep it in secret.
But it wasn't a secret. Everybody heard about it.
Well,
all the nations of the world heard about it. They were even offered it.
Yes, but they didn't accept.
Correct. So that means, so what secret? They were offered. They said no, and they went to the next one until they got to us. There's no secret.
What? Mm-hmm.
There was nobody else in that wilderness, were there?
Didn't have to offer it to them. I'm saying when he offered it to the other nations, God, the Torah tells us that God, whatever this means, offered the Torah to the other nations as well.
What was the timeline on that?
Prior to us accepting it.
I have a weird idea.
The funky word to translate the Chinese, though.
Is the desert supposed to be like the people, that it's barren, the people are barren, when you're given the Torah, the answers and the teach, you know, to fill you?
And then given
like
in the
idea.
Emptiness,
I like that
because
idea.
It
yeah.
mirrors the
Excellent
emptiness
idea.
Of.
I
people,
love it.
The people are without knowledge.
At the last, Dimitri, at the last Torah reading of the last parsha, right? The Zod HaBracha, right? This is the blessing that Moses, the man of God, bestowed upon the children of Israel before his death. He said, Hashem came from Sinai, having shown forth to them from Seir, name of a place, having appeared from Mount Paran, another place, and then approached with some of the holy myriads. Rashi's like, what are you talking about? He came before he got to Sinai, he gave us the map. He was first in Seir, then he was at Mount Paran. What? So Rashi identifies and tells us Seir is where Esav is from. That's where Esau is from. Oh, he offered it to the nations that came from Esau. And who's in Mount Paran? That was the area where Yishmael was from. Oh, one second. Oh, you see that he was, so to say, he first went there, offered it there. And if you take a look in that last section, it makes a reference to it.
The offering was happening all to one nation only. He didn't collect like unique nations.
Correct.
He went
make
to
one
each,
offer.
Correct.
To
correct.
Make sure that, you know, it's an intimate process.
Correct.
So if you accept it, it's between us. And if you reject it, it's also between.
I agree 100%. The only word I was doing was that the secretive part. It was no secret, but you're 100% right. And
that's
that is, intimate is a very key word here. And that is, it was intimate. This was a special bond that was built between us and God. There was nothing else, no one else. Yeah, they all heard about it. They were all cognizant of what was going on. But this was our private chuppah. That's the terminology that's used in the Midrash to describe. This is not just a God giving us the Torah. This was a wedding. And the mountain, so to say, was like the area for the chuppah. Have you heard the Midrash that says that God picked up the mountain over them? Whatever, I'll save it for the time. Whatever.
But so, why would he have offered it to those other nations before us?
He's just incredulous. Me too.
That was it by
what
Moses?
What is the meaning
or
of that?
What do you mean by Moses?
Did Moses offer?
No, God did.
Oh, because in that part you just read.
This is, Moses is recounting that God came, he's recounting the story of Mount Sinai. Because God came from Seir and God came from Mount Paran. The answer is very short. And that is, What was the Jewish people's response when God offered us the Torah? What did we say?
Yes.
They didn't say it like that. That's for sure. That's a very Jewish way of saying it.
Yes.
Right? We can't even answer the question with an answer. We have to do with a question. Yes. That's really what we said is Nase v'nishma. We will do and we will listen. We're in, committed. 100%, no questions asked. The Midrash tells us that when God offered it to the other nations, they asked, what's in it?
Oh.
And God told them things that he knew weren't going to be so favorable for them. So, okay, so they rejected it. But what was not, it wasn't just that God told them what they didn't want. The fact that they asked the question, what's
in it? Meant they weren't deserving?
Meant they really weren't so committed. If your parent, if you offer something to your child, right?
Yeah.
Shouldn't the child, there's a certain expectation that my parent has my best interest in mind. There is such an expectation, right? Mm-hmm. So if the parent is offering, I think it's somewhat of a chutzpah to, for the child to ask, well, what's in it? Not what's in the cake, you know, like you're trying to pull a fast one on me, right? But if I'm offering and saying, this is really good for you, right? And the child, well, will tell me more about it. Mm. It's a little bit of a chutzpah. I mean, I know that's very in vogue nowadays, right? But there's a certain level of how dare you. The fact that God offered them his most prized possession, the Torah, which is God's wisdom, and they all tell me a little bit more about it. Doesn't then you're not really so interested. Okay, you want to see if it's gonna fit with your lifestyle, as opposed to will you mold your lifestyle to live the way I would like you to live it? There's a world of difference. And I think that's the key difference. Anyway, Baruch Hashem, we're off topic. I want to introduce you a new topic.
Transition.
There's got to be more to this wilderness thing. Let's talk about the following. Have you ever had an experience that was really, I don't know, uplifting is not the right word, but super joyous, like a high, like you feel really great with the accomplishment? Everybody should have answered yes. We all, thank God, have had those experiences. Okay? If you can think back, maybe in the recent past, right? How soon after that did you feel a down? It's not uncommon after you hit a high that you feel low. Mm-hmm. You're not crazy. And you're not alone. And that is normal. And it happens. It happens frequently. There's a certain letdown period after you reach a high. I had one of my teachers was talking about his accomplishment that he was sharing with us, that he had gotten his PhD in psychology. Which is a pretty nice accomplishment. And he was all, you know, thrilled with himself, whatever it was. And soon thereafter, after all the hoopla died down, whatever it is, he was feeling very empty. He was feeling like a certain loss. And he couldn't put his finger on it. Okay, so he thought more about it, right? But it's not uncommon to have a spiritual or even some kind of high that then comes down to a low. There's a certain feeling of moodiness. Dare I say the word depression and emptiness. Okay. Thankfully, our goal is not to make it long lasting. And we get off of that and we say, listen, hey, okay, I had my high, I had my low. Now let's find it. Let's go down the middle of the road and keep going. Right? That's the way it should be. I thought about this. And the truth is, isn't that exactly the episode of the golden calf? The golden calf was how many days after the most there hasn't been an experience ever since as God speaking to the Jewish people at Mount Sinai. The Ten Commandments heard directly from God. And in how many days did they? 40 days. That's it. In 40 days, we literally jumped off the cliff. What? How can that be? It's a question that every thinking person has to ask themselves. If you heard God directly, how could you possibly now start dancing around the calf? Even if your intentions was only as a, what's the word you use? Not the instigator, but the...
A follower or accomplice.
Accomplice, right? You were just going along with it. Really? How could you possibly do that? It's a question that it's racked my head for years.
Well, like if you skip a class and then all of a sudden we go there, like, you know, the Catholic Church and attend class there. I skipped one class.
Is it possible?
Same. I got it. Here goes the keeper.
Is it possible that when you get something for free, almost a treasure, then you begin to think an awful lot about yourself?
What do you mean?
Well, if you know somebody gave me Torah, why don't I go and get something else? Because I'm worthy. Oh wait.
I mean, it could be.
Yeah. So things are going great. You know, I'll just nibble a little more from the big cake of love.
See what else? See what else is out there. Okay. Could be. But the whole nation? To me, that's like, what a drastic change. But in the context that we're talking about, I guess it doesn't shock me as much. It doesn't explain it, certainly doesn't condone it, but there is a certain element of human nature. I didn't bring it, I forgot, but in Psalms, fabulous, fabulous verse. The verse reads as follows. It says, "Mi yaleh bahar Hashem." Who can ascend on the Mount of God, which is pretty amazing, like who has the ability to ascend to that level. But the very next words are even more astounding. Right after saying, who can ascend the mountain of God is, mi yakum bimkom kacho. Who can remain standing there in a holy place?
Wow.
See, it's not enough that you go up and you had that high and you had this most amazing spiritual experience. That's only half the battle at most. The trick is, how do I stay there? Because the natural inclination is to come down. That's the natural inclination. So while King David is encouraging us, strive to ascend the mountain, but don't lose sight that that's not the goal. It's a one and done. It doesn't work that way. Because after you hit that peak, there's a downer. How do I get to stay there as best as I can, as high as I can, and go from there? That's really the key. What we find is a really interesting idea. And it's the key word here is transitions. I never thought about it until it was pointed out. I should have known it. What are if you read the Torah, if you read after we leave Egypt, right? So we're only a book and a half into the five books, right? The whole book of Bereshit, the whole book of Genesis is the story of our ancestors, till we get down to Egypt. The book of Exodus begins with us coming to the end of that period, pretty much, right? And then halfway through, we actually leave. And for the remaining 3.5 books, till Moses' death, that only spans 40 years. Think about it. The Exodus, Moshe is how old? 80. That's what we're told. And he dies at 120. And he dies on the precipice of going into the land of Israel. He leaves them for 40 years. So the majority of what we read of the stories post the Exodus are stories that happen in the desert. Now, if you look at those stories in and of themselves, you come to one of two possible conclusions. The Torah was either written by God or an anti-Semite. Because we do nothing right. We do nothing right. It's one tragedy after another. Right? Boom! The sin of the golden calf. Then you have, they're quarreling. They there's no water. We need nothing. Then they finally get water. And there's like, oh, but who's, we're sick of the manna. Give us something better. Right,
I want a good steak.
I give you quail. All right, right? And the next thing you know, they're like, and then you have a mounting of a rebellion. Korach mounts this rebellion mutiny against Moshe and Aaron's authority. And then you have the spies doing the reconnaissance mission, right? And you think, oh my God, this is over such over 40 years. But don't commit that piece of information to memory because it's wrong. It is over 40 years, but it's only in the first year and a half and the last year. 38 years in the middle is quiet. None of these stories take place. We know it historically from the way the Torah describes. I don't know. I know you back.
No, I said I didn't know that.
All of these stories that we read, especially in the beginning, about the complaining of the water and the complaining of the manna and the spies and the golden calf, that's all within the first year and a half after leaving Egypt. And the last complaints and all of that is in the year 40. It's quiet for 38 years.
Quiet means
as in,
not discussed.
There's no issues. Everybody is just, we're going along. And there's no stories to tell us of what we did wrong, about this issue that came up. It's quiet. The people are okay.
Like a car ride with him.
Except no, that's for the whole 40 years.
It's going to be. And then when you get close, like, oh.
And then it's quiet in the middle because they're on their electronic device. Right. So all the stories that took place, right, that we talk about are year 1 and 2 after the Exodus or year 40. Why? It's such a great observation. He wants to know why. What changed? The answer is because when you go through a transition, there's anxiety. There's just, we're not thinking clearly sometimes. It's just the natural because we don't know what's going to be. Transitions put us in that, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh mode. That's the way it is. Okay? It's human nature. Years of transition, going from one stage to the next. It's tremendous upheaval in a person's life. There's stress. There's issues. I'll tell you this, and it boggled my mind until someone gave me a great answer. We have a general principle that when a boy becomes bar mitzvah and a girl becomes a bat mitzvah, quote unquote, they're adults. They have responsibilities to fulfill the mitzvahs like you and me. Correct? Mm-hmm. We call them adults. What are you smoking? Right? What are you talking about? How could we possibly? They're 12, 13 years old. There's no way. You're going to hold that 13, 14, 15-year-old kid responsible to the same level as us?
Maybe not in everyday life, but within the...
In the 613 commandments.
My kids are cool with that. They do them and don't do them all.
Putting on tefillin, mm-hmm. Is there like a little asterisk in the Torah that says, between ages of 13 to 15, do your best?
No.
It doesn't say that. No. When you're obligated, you're obligated. And there's no.
Like getting married, not that much later than that. Like, weren't they treated as adults in society?
There was no such thing as teenage years in older societies.
So, do you not find that a little... I don't know what the word is, a little strange. You ever take, I took human growth and development, right? Has it changed?
Well, the concept of adolescence has only been since the Industrial Revolution. There was no
the
sense
concept, of one second, the concept that we understand it, there always was adolescence. Now, they didn't have the luxury that we had.
Right.
Right, because they were out to work.
They were expected to act as adults. They got married. They had
jobs. But they didn't have the ability. They really didn't. They were not equipped for it.
Well, some people are not equipped to do anything at the age of 15.
I had a teacher once who said to me, everybody matures. Everybody does. Some people just peak very early.
Or across the sun, but you were in directly. Yeah,
that, how true is that, right?
Yeah.
That's it. You peak very early, like about 11.
Probably Brutus and what was it? Alexander the Great? He was a great general at the age of 15, I think, which is unbelievable, but fact.
So here's what's fascinating. In halacha, when it comes to Jewish law, there is a difference between a 13-year-old and a 35-year-old.
So many.
There is a difference. Believe it, in Jewish law.
In all.
Yeah.
I'm waiting.
Wait. Yeah, you're
No. I'm not catching a ride.
Yeah.
This is different.
Hey. 1 second.
Keep the cannoli. Mine.
This is. Listen to this. Until the child from after Bar Bat Mitzvah, until the age of 20. If the young adult, right, commits a crime that would warrant a heavenly punishment, meaning there are certain things that are, the Torah says, for example, if the 15-year-old steals something, then the Torah says, if you're caught stealing, so you have to make remuneration, right? You got to pay back. And if you can't, then there's law of how you do that. Fine. The 15-year-old is held to that standard as well, because that's done through the court system. But there are certain things that if a person does that there's no court that enforces, that's between you and God. And God has a punishment. But God waits till the child is 20 years old before ever enforcing that law. Why? From 13 to 20, why? Why? And now you know why. Is because a child between a young adult from 13 to 20 is not fully there yet. The studies have shown again and again and again that there's something that changes, and it science today, it's about 20. At age 20, there is a certain level of maturity that goes on in the brain. Our sages knew this thousands of years ago. And therefore, the halacha reflects that that's true. Now, why is it that we say that the teenage years are the most tumultuous? Why? Why?
Transition.
Bingo. That's exactly why. Because there's no time in a person's life that there's more change and more of a transition than from the 13 to 20. Fact. And therefore, it makes perfect sense. As we said, the more you understand that during the time period of a transition, the natural human, you're not at ease, there's anxiety, the stress, you're not thinking clearly. I mean, that is the definition of a teenager. Nothing against teenagers. Thank God I survived all of them. All of them. Right?
No, almost.
I have one that's still just on the cusp. Getting there.
So, no matter what the crime.
No, if it's those kinds of crimes that could only be held accountable by the heavenly court, so to say, by God, not something that can be actualized down here.
Okay,
but something in the world to come. No,
whatever. There are certain crimes, right? Let's say a person committed a certain crime without witnesses. Right? So that can't be, that's not punishable in the courts. The Torah has requirements that there has to be witnesses, a warning, all that stuff. Right? What if the person, there was one witness? The one witness under Torah law, that's not an acceptable testimony, and the person can't be held accountable in the court. Right? But you have facts. Right? One person saw it. Mm-hmm. That's endowed in God's realm. It's nothing that we can put into action here. Okay, those things God will not do until the child is at least 20, because you can't expect it. Because the child is going through transition. I'll show you where else you see this. And ladies, you'll know this better than me, far better, right? Think to childbirth for a moment. Isn't there a period called transition?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What is it?
Somebody, their contractions get really intense.
Correct. It's a period of intense pain, short, right? hopefully relatively short, right? Right? But isn't that the time? Again, I can only tell you what happened in my experiences, right? And that's when the woman begins to say, I can't do this.
That's
I give up.
If we had a gun, just kill me.
Right.
That's it. It wasn't
the contractions before.
Yeah.
It's during transition. You're like, oh, I'm pulling my hair. I'm going crazy. I can't
never
do
this.
Never again. And that's where the slogan began, right? Never again. Right? During transition. Because you're not in your right mind. Nothing personal. Right? You're really not. That is reflecting a truth. That during transitional moments, where it's just the way we're wired. And when we finally come to terms with that, we can begin to address it to the best of our ability. But you're not crazy. This is normal. And the males in the room, we may not go through that kind of transition, but we go through our transitions also. And there are moments in our lives where, you know, that's the way it is. It's an inability to relax. It's an inability to have a sense of serenity and tranquility to think it through. If you knew, again, you'll all say it yes now, but if someone were to say it to you and say, I'm telling you, just hold on for 6 minutes, 10 minutes, the baby will be here. Right? I can say it to you now, and intellectually you'll understand it. But in the heat of that moment, you'll tell me these words I probably haven't heard since my days in Brooklyn. Right? And you'll be I'm probably gonna learn some new ones, right? But because at that moment you can't do it.
You can't get a football.
You can't.
Yeah,
it just can't be done.
Yeah.
Does the court system recognize that not
because we're bound because there's a laws of justice. I can't show pity and favoritism. If I'm going to hold you responsible, which, again, from a Torah perspective, responsibility is an opportunity. It's not always, you know, we always look at what happens when I mess up, right? But if I'm giving you responsibility, that means I recognize your greatness. You don't give your 10-year-old the responsibility, you give your 15-year-old. Proof? The 15-year-old can start going for their driver's license. Now, you may like it, you may not like it, right? But we recognize that they have some level of responsibility because they can treat it. They should treat it with that love. You're not going to trust your 10-year-old, but I have to follow a law. If the law states that at age 13, you become officially responsible, then I can't say the kid who goes ahead and becomes irresponsible and say, it's okay, you're only 15. Then you end up, I shouldn't have this on tape, right? Then you end up with what we have in Baltimore, right? With a juvenile system that is absolutely out of control.
What's the issue?
The issue is that they're finding, and they just had another case here in Howard County, in Maryland, right? Where repeat juveniles already on the don't, he's already on home ankle, you know, the ankle monitoring and this and that, just committed murder again. How do you let a kid out 15? Well, you know, you have to. Laws are laws. If he's old enough to be able to do this, then he's old enough to be able to do that. And he has to be held responsible. The court can't show that kind of favor. If it is, it is. In heavenly, there can be a little more because that's God.
So for the heavenly justice, is it deferred into the child's
20?
Or
no.
It's excused?
It's let's see what happens after 20. Let's see. It's hopeful that the child's behavior will have changed. And therefore, you can chalk this up to
is this a
juvenile.
Is it kind of probation?
Mm-hmm. Maybe. But it always struck me like, why should there be a difference? Because the answer is because a 13 to 20-year-old is in the middle of a transition, the greatest transition in their life. And it's reflected that way. Now, on the other hand, because we recognize that with all the ups that come, there's downs also during transition, you never get to a lowest point where there's despair. There's no such concept in Judaism that you despair of a situation. There's no such thing as hopelessness.
Hmm.
Why are we called Jews? Comes from the word Yehudi. Yehudim, right? We're the Jews. We're going to have Purim soon, right? La Yehudim, Haita Ora, La Yehudim, La Yehudim. To the Jews, there was. Why are we called Yehudim? From the word Yehuda. Are you from Judah? I don't know. I don't know what tribe I'm from. If you're a Kohen or a Levi, then you know you're not.
Oh, yeah.
But the rest of us, we have no idea.
Oh.
I don't know what tribe I'm from.
It's just me.
I don't know what tribe I'm from. So why are we all called Yehudim, which implies that we're all from Judah? So some answer, because if you know a little about Jewish history, after King Solomon, the kingdom split. There was a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom. The southern kingdom was known as Yehuda. The northern kingdom was known as Yisrael. So this was that. Okay. But doesn't explain why all of us are called Yehudim. So there's different answers proposed, but here's one. Let's talk about a story we all know. The story of Joseph. Not this one, the other one. I hope it's not this one. Joseph, right? He becomes, we know all the beginning, right? And ultimately, he becomes second in command to Pharaoh. Right? And the brothers come down, there's a famine, so he's rough with them. Ultimately, he frames Benjamin, puts the goblet in his sack, and he says, he stole. He needs to stay. He's going to become my slave. Right? Remember this part? Who steps up to the plate to get to say to Joseph, no, we're not letting him stay. If anything, I'll take his place. I'll be your servant. I'll be your slave. Let him go back to dad because we don't want the negative effect onto Jacob. Who speaks up?
Judah.
That is correct. Good guess, given the context we're talking. But I knew you knew that. Judah. What happened to the other brothers? How come they didn't speak up?
They left.
They're there. They're all there.
Their options.
Maybe
there's something to do with they were afraid because they were complicit in.
So was Judah.
But weren't they still afraid?
Yes.
They weren't.
Yeah, but they don't know it's Joseph yet. They don't know that yet. The answer is that like most of us, they were paralyzed at the situation. Mm-hmm. They looked at it and said, how the heck are we going to get out of this? Benjamin was found with the goods in his sack. He's dead to rights. There's no way out. And they're paralyzed. Like Judah says, I get it. There does seem to be an absolute hopelessness. There's no way out. But I still got to do what I got to do. And it speaks up. We're called Yehudim because we never, no matter the challenge, no matter the situation, even when it seems hopeless, no way out, we are like Yehuda, we're like Judah. We step up and we do what we have to do.
Any other explanation for why it was Judah?
Yes.
Are there any stories that tell why he would be the one?
Yes, because he had promised Jacob earlier that I personally guaranteed to bring Benjamin back. So he had to step up. But with this understanding, fine, that was maybe his motivation. But everybody else also had a vested interest. It's their father. It's their brother. They put their hands up. There's no way out. I can't see a way out. And Judah says, I don't either, but I got to do what I got to do. I made a promise. Mm-hmm. We don't despair. There's no biblical word. It doesn't exist for despair. There's no such word.
Despair. We're persecuted.
Yes, that's correct. We're about to talk about the Purim story. It looked hopeless. The decree was to wipe out man, woman, child. Annihilate. You think Hitler was the first one to come up with this? It's an old story. Haman Achashverosh had it down and they got it on the books. Just some wacky idea. It became the rule of land. How are you going to get out of this?
Yet you would know until you step up.
That's correct. But most people, the vast, overwhelming majority, don't even know where to begin. And they become paralyzed. Not they. Dare I say, we?
Pure garbage, wouldn't you say?
The whole concept of a Jewish people. Where do we come from? We come from an old couple. Wow. Abraham and Sarah. Despair. Hopelessness. What are the odds? Right? Our entire origin as a people come from an impossible situation.
Odds are always zero unless you tried.
Yes. But the odds, even if they tried, and I guarantee you they tried. Abraham and Sarah were married for many years. I guarantee you they tried.
But they didn't try that particular time.
At age 90.
Yeah.
89, right? That's who we are. We are Yehudim.
It's not right.
We are Yehudim. That's the way it is. Okay? So, very quickly, how can we view transitions positively? How can we do it? Because we know it's hard. How can we do it? So, it comes down to the one letter in the alphabet. The letter Mem. You know that Mem?
Mm-hmm. It looks like Mem.
Mm-hmm. Right? Letter M. Mem. Why is it called Mem?
I don't know.
Some want to suggest that it's related to the word mayim, water. Keep that in mind. Okay, life. What's the numerical value of the letter mem? We know that every letter has like aleph is one, bet is two, gimel is three. What's the letter mem?
20. 18.
What?
I would say 18.
18. It can't be.
It's 13.
It goes ones, then tens, then hundreds.
It's 13. No.
Yes, if you're counting. Yeah.
Otherwise, you 14.
Just, yud, chav, lamed, mem. No, it would be 14, right? Right? But no, it's value. You guys don't know the value system?
No.
I'll have to send this to you.
Yeah.
Okay. Aleph is one, bet is two, gimel is three, dal is four, hey is five, vav is six, zayin, seven, chet is eight, tet is nine, yud is 10. So far, we're good. Okay? Chaf, the next letter is 20. Lamed is 30. And it goes by 10. Right? Because if you want to say, I don't know, 13, you would say Yud, Gimel. Yud is 10, Gimel is 3.
That's 40.
Mem is 40. Okay? Chaf, Lamed, Mem is 40. Right? We talked about 40. Right? Mem is 40. Nun is 50. Samach 60. Ayin 70. Pei 80. Sadi 90, kuf, kuf is 100, resh is
1,000,
200, okay. Shin 300, tough 400. That's the typical thing. That's, we'll just, this is like beginner's level. Stop there. We're not going to talk about final letters. It's a whole different system. Okay?
It's a whole different system?
You with me? Okay. Okay. So mem is 40. Water, 40. Keep those two
years.
Things in mind. The Talmud asks, yes, 40 is all over the place. The Talmud asks a very simple question based on a verse. What is God's signature? Chotamo shel Hashem. What is the signature, the seal? What is the trait that is God's seal? Emet, truth. Truth. Now this word truth, this word emet, fascinating. It's three letters. First letter is, I'll give you an eh.
An I?
Close.
Aleph.
Yeah. Aleph. I thought you started with the Aleph. That would be the obvious, right? Aleph. And then the last letter, t, emet. Tav. So Aleph is what letter in the alphabet?
First.
Tav.
Last.
Last one. What's in the middle? Emet. With the men. Aleph, mem, tav. First, middle, last. Spells the word truth.
Just like Amazon.
Amazon. Wow. Right. Interesting.
That's interesting. We do the A to Z thing.
Yes. Yeah. But here's what's even more fascinating. Is because, number one, just as a side note, that's the definition of truth. It has to be from beginning to end and all the way through. Yes. None of this half-truths, none of this. The word truth represents, if it's really true, it's got to be from beginning, middle, and end, all the way through. The whole truth and nothing but. Okay? Beautiful how it's reflected in the word. Okay. But here's what's even cooler. Okay? That is, watch the transitions. Okay? If you go from Aleph to Mem and combine them, spells the word aim. What's aim?
Mother.
Mother, like Ima, right? Aim is mother, okay? That's the beginning of life. If you take the next transition, mem and tav, met means
death.
So you have the transition of mother, aim, the mother bringing the child into the world, right? Transition.
That's going to be Pink Floyd. From Sid Band here.
Okay? To the last transition is mate. Mita is that. But wait, I'm not done.
But wait, there's more.
There's more. If you wonder now, we'll throw in the gitsu. Okay. Aleph, that's what was. That's in the past. Kav, that's coming up. That's in the future. Mem represents the present. Okay? Now, think about that. The transition, it's the arena where all these decisions matter. I can't change the past. I don't really have a handle on the future. Can't determine that. I can try my best. I can try to stack the deck in my favor, but we all know we can't determine the future. So the Aleph is out of my realm because it's done. The Tough is out of reach, right? So what is it that I can deal with? Is Mem, is the here and the now. So the Mem is the letter that's representative of the here and now, the present. Okay. It's the area of action. It's fascinating. I asked when we first started, why was the Torah given in the wilderness? Why? Of all places. So there was a fellow, he was French, and I'm just going to do my best. Arnold van Gennep. Gennep? I don't know how you pronounce it. He was French and ethnographer. Is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know, like French word, but ethnographer.
Ethnographer.
The last name.
That she wrote about people.
All right, I see ethnicity.
Oh, okay.
So here's the thing.
Like a sociologist, anthropologist,
maybe combination. He died in 1957, but he's talking in his book, Rites of Passage. And I didn't read it. I found this quoted by one of my favorites, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks.
Wow.
Okay, now he's like, woo-hoo! So listen to this. This fellow, this Arnold dude, he writes that that there's three periods in a person, every moment really, of where to become the person they want to become. You have to do, there's three steps. It's a three-step process. The first thing he says is separation. You have to break with the past. Skip the middle for a second. The third is to incorporate the re-entry with the new identity. You have to break with the past. That's the first step. And then you have to become the new you. What's the middle step? What's the middle step? That he calls the transition between who you were and who you're about to become. It's how you recast yourself, refashioning yourself into becoming the new you. But it can't be a light switch of where today I'm like this, now boom, I'm like that. It doesn't work that way. It's a process of shedding the old and transitioning into the new. You can't escape it. It has to be in a three-step process. This is his big liminal. That's his word. Liminal. It's from the Latin word for a threshold. Mm-hmm. That middle stage he calls the liminal. Because you're transitioning. The Torah had to be given in the wilderness because that's the middle point of where I'm no longer that. I've shed the old, but I have not yet incorporated the new me. It has to be in no man's land. It has to be in that one moment or time period, I should say, of where I'm no longer this, but I'm not yet that.
That's the point.
But like physically.
Yes, but it's indicative of what's truly going on inside the Jewish people. We're no longer, we've shed, so to say, that slavery, but we have yet to become that new generation ready to go into the
land. You can't really shed the slavery in one piece.
Correct. It's a process. Correct. Agreed.
But that's why everyone was killed off. to have that transition.
Because well, you don't have to be killed off. Yeah. Yeah. I grew up in the wilderness, so you have to.
Wilderness is not just a place, it's a state of being.
Love it.
Because you need to have that transition. Transitions are a part of life. And we have to recognize that. They're not all going to be good days, and they're not all going to be stuck in bad days. We go through transitions. That's just the way it is. Life is full of transitions. It's inevitable. We're going to have our down moments. But we got to be able to pick ourselves up and say, okay, let's transition into what do I now want to be? What do I need to become? That's how we do it.
I have to blurt out and been bothering my thoughts. I was just picturing Terry the milkman singing, transition.
What's the song?
Maybe that's it.
No, I wasn't it. Sorry.
Changes.
Oh, so that was my first choice.
Yeah.
I really was. Which one?
Born to be wild.
She's in the wilderness. Yeah.
The golden halftime.
There's a song. It can pass. You can play it if you want on Alexa.
Oh.
Bye for Fighting. It's called 100 Years.
Oh, I know this song. It's a little country song. It's stumbling. Yeah.
You want to, Alexa can play it.
Do you know it?
Yeah, let's sing it.
Put it on. Play it if you want. No, it's called 100 Years by Five for Fighting.
Okay. I'm like, it's feeling familiar.
Yeah. Okay.
It was on radio all the time.
It was.
I will do an intuitive dance. Judy Collins.
It's Josh. It's with an O. Really struck me, like each stage you think you got it, and then you're like, oh wait, transitioning into something else, like maybe not, there's something else there.
I feel sad. I know.
Then you die. The land of the rules by the city of the sun that we have.
Obviously, there's so many other themes in the song as well, obviously. But it struck me. I remember it also listening to it on the radio when it was playing like all the time. But it's like each stage was something else, and you transition into the next one. And they're not simple stages. I just want to finish with this because I didn't tie this piece up. The letter mem, right? We said it was what represents the present, right? And the idea of the transitions from Aleph all the way to Tuf. But I didn't connect it to the water and 40. I forgot that. What is the one of the major mechanisms in Judaism about transitions? It's a mikvah.
Mm-hmm.
A mikvah is a transition, right? If we're, right, a woman and part of her cycle, that it's transitioning through different time periods. It's the letter mem, right, is for mikvah. It's water, right, which is also very interesting. And the measurement of how much the minimum amount is 40 sa, whatever that is. That's the number. The number 40 is directly linked to the mikvah, which is all about transitioning. That fits in. I should have brought that up, but I guarantee you will not forget this word, emet, truth, transitioning, aim,
yeah,
right? Coming into life and meet.
That is so crazy.
Crazy as in good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the realm of the Orthodox Jew, Messiah, transition as well.
Sure.
Right?
Everything then, is. It is. There's a, this world to the next world. Even just the whole concept of transition. Everything about Judaism teaches us that on the one hand, we're not stagnant. We're always moving. And we are transitioning. We are supposed to transition. That's really what it is. We're not meant to... You're there. There's no such thing as you've arrived.
No, of course not. That
correct. But we think about it only in the micro. Judaism shows us that even on the macro level, our whole life here is a transition. We're here for now. We're supposed to do as much as we can so that we can transition to the next world.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for the here and now. You do it. That's what I'm saying. Like you're doing it on the micro level in so many ways. But Judaism shows us the macro, all about transitions. Great point about Mashiach. It's, you know, the world coming to its perfection, however that's going to happen.
And I think about the biology and the metabolism. We always ingest things from outside the world, food and oxygen, and then you excrete or the dead cells. So, not a single atom of your body is the same as the old body.
Mm.
I don't think so.
Every three months, your
maternity?
Yeah. No, internally. That's why when they check for your blood sugar, right, your A1C, right, it's every 3 months because the red blood cells.
Oh,
right. That which was here three. That's why it's one of the better tests. Because in the old days, they usually just tested whatever you had that day. You know, I was like, okay, if I happened to have breakfast that morning or yesterday, the whole thing is skewed.
Uh-huh.
But when they do this A1C test, they look at the three-month period because you can tell, I guess, however they read the blood, those red cells every 3 months.
Isn't that glucose is stored in the red blood cells?
Right?
Yeah.
Huh. But those red blood cells are only here for 3 months.
They don't lie. I can attest to that.
I can attest to it as well. That's why I mean so much more careful. That little number is just like, you know, it's creeping up, Robin. Yeah. Okay.
What, the A1C number?
Yeah. My sugars were good. Thank God, nothing serious, but I don't want it to get serious. So I got serious about not getting serious. That's the story. Anyway, something to think about.
You want your... New York sheets back?
You're welcome to have it, or you can hand them out. Either way.
Is it the number thing? Is the gematria?
Yep.
Right. So are there books on just that?
There's a million things. I'm just going to turn off the recording. You guys can stay on.